WildTalkRadio.com.
The following program is not intended for children. It contains mild language, violence, sexual innuendo, wink, wink, brief nudity, and deals with mature themes that some may find offensive. Parental discretion is advised.
The Wild Talk Radio Network now presents The Evolution in Online Sports Entertainment.
Hey, everybody, this is X-Pac with D-Generation X.
Hey, this is the Rated R Superstar, a.k.a. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge.
This is everyone's favorite wrestler and mine, Rob Van Dam. You're listening to me because you are listening to Wrestle Talk Radio.
Wrestle Talk Radio.
Who's ready for story time, baby?
Hosted by Tim Stein.
Best there is, the best there was, or the best there ever will be.
The intern, Kane Kittens.
I am the best in the world at everything I do.
Special guest host this week, local indie wrestler Keishi Matsunaga.
I'm better than you, and you know it.
And the producer, Sir Rockin.
Acknowledge me.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
WTR Sunday Night.
And remember, it's okay to play with yourself. As long as you have an action figure.
It's Sunday night. You know what that means. It's another edition of WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio. And we're streaming live at twitch.tv/WTR Live and wildtalkradio.com. I'm producer Sir Rockin, joined as always by the intern, Kane Kittens.
Hey everyone, I would just like to formally apologize to one Keishi Matsunaga. I did not know how far my power reaches, and my bad.
I didn't know your powers reached the curling rink.
They reached the curling rink, which is why Casey's back, y'all.
Well, I mean, technically, I was also going to be off today anyway because curling is done for the Christmas season. But now I don't know if I'll go back anytime soon. So yeah, I'm a 1.6 legged man.
And eventually, the one and only Tim Stein will be here. He was finishing eating.
The hamster fell off of the wheel that powers his computer. We understand.
No, he's eating. He's watching something called The Grey Cup or something. I don't know.
Who watches The Grey Cup?
Is that that thing that is supposed to be football but isn't because they have, like, forward motion and, like, 50-yard end zones and stuff like that?
I mean, our field goal posts are at the front of our end zones. And our fields are longer, so we like to punish our players up here by making them run further with less downs and
with obstacles.
Oh, and make them play outside in the winter.
We still do that.
We do that too.
Yeah, but you're not north of the 49th parallel.
Valid. Valid.
we've had games. Canada. That's true. I'll give you that. There have literally been games here where we've had to take breaks to shovel the field.
They've done that because
more than like what I'm trying to do the math in my head. More than 6 inches of snow has come down during a game.
See, that's why modern fields now have heaters built in under the grass.
Yes, but we're in Canada,
which means you're inherently 40 years behind.
Also, our league doesn't have a multi-trillion-dollar budget to do that with every field.
And whose fault is that?
I don't know. Rich
Justin
people
Trudeau.
Who don't. I think it goes a little bit further down the line. It's a combination of many different prime ministers from all walks of life.
So there you go. All right. Because I know Tim probably hasn't seen it. I want your guys' reaction to what happened on Rampage on Friday. The debut of internet legend Hook.
Oh, they sent Hook.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
They sent him hard.
Look, the kid is very good at judo from what I've seen. That's amazing. He he can, you know, flip a guy like Ty Conti or Ronda Rousey. Awesome. Still has the personality of a door. And dear God, someone shave the kid's fucking head.
You didn't like all that, whatever you call it, going on?
He looked like a reject from Flock of Seagulls.
I mean, that could have been what he was going for.
Well, all he needs to do is take promo lessons from his dad.
No, then he'll end up on Botchamania. Taz has his own segment. He's that bad.
I mean, I enjoyed it, and you're on the money with all the judo stuff that he does. But I mean, if you think about it, they're playing to his strengths, which is good. They're not making him do a whole lot of other stuff yet, which is good. I mean, I know he does do training in between shows where he's standing on the ramp with his bag of potato chips, so that's good.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. Okay, yes, you did a good job by starting him against, you know,
Fuego.
one and 3 billion Fuego del Sol.
If they use him sparingly, it won't be that big of a deal.
But here's the thing is, I know Tony Khan is going to see, oh my God, everyone loves Hook.
Oh yeah.
Let's push him to the moon. And he'll end up getting a match against like a Jungle Boy. Or, you know, a Darby Allin. And the second that happens, his ass is going to get exposed.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, you also have, like, his dad is there at all times, who will also protect his ass. So I wouldn't be surprised if Taz is like, here's what he can do, here's what we don't want him to do. Because, you know, like, with Taz having, Taz probably has a little bit of input with what Hook's doing based on the fact that he's there. So I think if they keep him... If they're kind of like, especially because they're heel factions, so if they kind of tease him and only have him do stuff every once in a while, but still have him make appearances on the show, which will be good for all of the people who like Hook, then if done properly, you can have the right balance of wrestling exposure and then exposure in general, and hopefully they can kind of keep him from doing too much until he's ready.
Also, okay, wait, hold on, right before you go, Brent. They're called Hookers.
I know. I intentionally did not say that.
I just want to make sure you know his fan base is called
Hookers.
Maybe
they're also big rugby fans. We don't know.
They could be. Or fishing people.
Yeah. But so you mentioned the words using him sparingly. And so basically you're going to use him like the AEW women's division?
I was going to say like Wardlow. Because it's forever he doesn't get used, and now he's starting to get used again.
Well, yeah, I mean, they put him in the battle royal. I don't know if that count.
No, he's been working dark.
Keep working that, you know, 3 year long burn of him and MJF breaking up. They're trying to milk that for all it's worth and do as slow of a simmer as I've ever seen.
I mean, it's not the worst idea. Like they're, I mean, you can't say that they're not good at playing long storylines, because they seem to do it all the time with lots of things.
Well, yes, but at the same time, they do really stupid things, and then they're like, wait, let's build that into this storyline. Like, the fact that MJF and Sean Spears were betting on matches during, you know, like, the first, when COVID first hit.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden it was like, oh, that was a signal of the pinnacle a year later. And it's like, no, it wasn't.
No, it was just... It was just two guys who probably hate each other, but hate everybody else more.
Right.
Yeah.
But instead, all of the fans glom onto this and turn it into this conspiracy theory of like, oh, this is how it's all playing out. No.
But that's...
I'm sorry, they don't have that much forethought.
Is that a fan thing, or is that... Yeah. Like, the fans can come to all kinds of conclusions.
But they'll tie it in during, like, promo packages.
And...
Because fans have made that connection. They're like, oh, maybe we should run with this.
They might, and they might not. We won't know until we know.
Just make sure you never criticize Tony Khan.
Yeah, he's one who can't handle criticism.
Oh, really?
If you watch him, how defensive he is when people, like, they were criticizing the booking of Adam Cole, he had to come out and, you know, defend the booking. Like,
I don't pay that much attention to that stuff.
Yeah. One person was like, oh, here's where they're going wrong with Adam Cole. He was better off in NXT. It's like, he had to say, well, you know, he's seeing by a younger audience now, so he's you know, I think he's in a good position.
I mean, they say he was better off in NXT, but as of this week, he may not have been better off in NXT.
Yeah, because, well, he was better off in the original NXT 2.0.
Yes, but yeah, it's a new era now. They're 2.0. So then you can go, well, maybe he got out at the right time because then he didn't have to worry about any of the 2.0 stuff.
Like Kyle and Johnny, because they're gone.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I would say Gargano was handled well. Kyle was handled okay, but
they both were used to make you guys.
Kyle would have done, I think it would have benefited Kyle more if 2.0 didn't happen.
Oh, God, yeah.
Where Gargano kind of got everything out of NXT that he could have, whereas there probably could have been more stuff for O'Reilly to do, but that transition, I mean,
Kyle was on the verge of being the champion, and then they decided, hey, we're going to do something called 2.0, and we're going to take you out of that title match we put you in, and hey, you're teaming with the guy who they put in that match instead of you, and now, you know, you're used to make him.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, hindsight and all that other stuff, you can only do so much.
Oh, yeah, but doing so much, we mentioned Kyle O'Reilly and Johnny Gargano. Johnny Gargano and Kyle O'Reilly's contracts have expired as of this week, and they're free agents.
Oh, no. Why don't they go to Ring of Honor?
Well, you see, Tim, there was a thing called Final Battle.
Final Battle, yes.
And it was
the final battle.
Maybe until the final battle.
It was until April.
Maybe.
Until April.
But, we'll see.
You know, here's the thing. Everybody's saying, you know, they're all towing the company line. Yeah, Ring of Honor, we'll be back in April. But a shit ton of people were acting like that is it.
They titled it End of an Era, and they were all saying their goodbyes last night. So
yes, so we're going to get ROH 2.0, April 2022.
A new couple.
Fingers crossed.
Starring... Brody King?
No, it's got to be a whole bunch of new people like 2.0. Otherwise, you can't call it ROH 2.0. So it's got to be.
No. You get one or two people that are returning because, you know, like, oh, yes, like Tommaso, right. You've got to have the guys that help transition. So you'll get Jonathan Gresham. And I guess the Briscoes unless they lose to FTR, because, of course, Tony Khan will try to put whatever belt they can from another company onto his show because it's more shiny things for him.
Also, Tony needed his praise that he lent them Jay Lethal.
Oh,
last
for fuck's sake. I don't know if Papa Khan did not, you know, play with him enough as a kid, or, you know, he shoved him off to the nanny one too many times, but his constant need for praise and adoration is just fucking over it.
So we all know what happened with the NWA pay-per-view and how the NWA did not give him enough credit for you know, paying his women and providing them with his women on the show, right? We all know that story, right?
No, I was not aware of that. I was.
Oh yeah, he made a big deal on a conference call that he held. He interrupted a women's reporter asking about will they ever do a women's only show, and then he went on a tirade about how, you know, NWA didn't, you know, give him enough credit for, you know, providing them with the talent and paying the talent, his talent, and et cetera, et cetera. Like, he was a big part of it.
He basically enacted his privilege at the expense of a female reporter. It was not a good sign for Tony.
Which is why at the end of this press release that I got, ROH would like to publicly thank AEW for allowing Lethal to wrestle at Final Battle End of an Era.
Yeah.
It's the second to final line in the press release.
That's not great.
Just do the favor.
Yeah.
Don't make it about all that.
But he also led so many other people to the show, Brock. It was all of those surprises that helped make Final Battle.
He did.
I mean, I wouldn't I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I enjoyed Deonna Purrazzo showing up, but she's Impact.
Yeah, she's Impact.
Which was a subsidiary at one point to AEW. Yeah.
I mean, wow. I wouldn't go that far, but sure. I mean, FTR showing up was cool, but I don't know if it was like, oh my god, cool.
Yeah, the Titan showing up was cool, but that had nothing to do with Tony.
No.
Yeah.
Briscoe's to AEW most likely? Maybe for a one-off, maybe a two-off, but I don't think it's a long-term.
I don't, no offense, I don't see the Briscoes fitting in with what AEW is trying to do, especially if they put a mic in their hands.
Yeah.
Rock, I know we talked about this last night with, you know, Pizza Cutter Boy. I think they may be a little more conscious of, like, there's one thing about going to Nick Gage and being like, okay, we need you to not do certain things. Like, he can go in there and have a death match, that's fine. But they didn't put a mic in his hands because they were smart.
Mm-hmm.
I think if the Briscoes come out there, yeah, there will not be a microphone within, like, 10 meters of them. Because the second they open their mouth, the FCC would come along and be like, we need to have a word with you guys. Even though you're on cable.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the new year brings for current / former / maybe wrestlers of ROH.
So let's go there. Brent's random question of the week. Brent?
So yeah, last night was Final Battle. And they touched on a lot of like what the legacy of Ring of Honor have been. We saw, you know, Phil on the show with a pro, or you know, with a taped segment talking
that got some interesting reaction too, by the way.
Oh, I didn't see that part.
Oh, because Phil came on, they showed that promo, but all the people of color were doing something in the ring, doing a salute and stuff, and they cut to a promo package of Phil. Twitter was not happy about that.
Oh no.
Anyway, all right. Continue on.
So Daniel showed up on screen too, Brian Danielson. Adam Page, you know, expressly making sure that he was AEW champion Adam Page. He doesn't get the same, you know, lower third treatment that he does in AEW, though. I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have a lot about, like, what the legacy has been of Ring of Honor. But do you think they're really going to be able to come back after this hiatus? Or have we really kind of seen the end of Ring of Honor?
I think we've seen the end of Ring of Honor as it currently stands. I don't think if they do come back, they're going to put out a similar product. It'll be different. Whether or not people will like it or not, I mean, that's going to be remain to be seen if it even does come back. But I don't think it'll have the same thing as it did in this quote unquote first era, especially back in the early 2000s when it was what it was.
Yeah. Honestly, this really does feel a little bit like the Anthem TNA, where it was like TNA had the slow death and they kind of had to hit the reset button. But kind of like what you've talked about with this new Ring of Honor that may be coming, I don't, you know, TNA hasn't ever, gotten back to what it once was. They're slowly trying to build it, but I don't ever see TNA being quite able to get to the level where they were. And I also see Ring of Honor, if they try and do, you know, like their plan of we're going to use the talent that are available, in my opinion, that's going to submarine the company because you're relying on people not being booked elsewhere to fill your roster. And that's not a, you know, recipe for success.
Do you have a thought? Especially
if they're trying to be champion.
Mm-hmm. Tim, do you have a thought?
Well, I'm kind of got mixed thoughts and feelings about Ring of Honor. I really would like to see them come back because, as far as professional wrestling goes, the more quality product there is out there, the better, the more opportunities there are for wrestlers to get out there and actually, you know, apply their craft as opposed to getting cut and then wondering what the hell they're going to do because there's nowhere else for them to go.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you and I talked about this all the way back in what, October, Rock? I think it was October, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Middle of October. They've got some real serious shit they got to work out. Their parent company really screwed the pooch. And how deeply in debt is the company thanks to the parent company?
Not a good situation.
It's really bad. And speaking of somebody who got put into a bad situation financially, it's not easy to dig your ass out.
Especially for them when they're not the ones who are responsible for generating the, you know.
Yeah, it's not their fault.
Yeah.
It also doesn't help when they try to air Ring of Honor on their network channels and it's like random 12 o'clock on a Friday.
Yeah, who's going to be home to watch that?
Well, I mean, people will be home. They're just not going to watch it.
The answer is Lone Jobber.
And actually, I watched this last episode. It's so sad watching the TV taping still and no one is there. It is an empty arena with, you know, two or three wrestlers in the ring. It's just so sad to see still.
And that's the other, you know, the other thing about it. How are they going to get the fans to show up if they fire up again?
Free tickets.
No, people would pay.
No, you don't need free tickets. Free tickets is instant death, all right?
Well, Rock.
Or at least a slow lingering death. What they need to generate the excitement. They've got to generate that interest. They've got to take a risk, find the financing, and bring in some names that are going to be available.
Well, I was going to say, the problem of trying to, like Rock said, you know, there may be fans that want to go, but it's really hard to sell a ticket when you don't know who's going to be there. Yes, I know PWG has done the Vortex cards, and you may roughly know a name or two that's there, but it's hard to build substantially off of, come see Ring of Honor.
Why? Because
we'll have some people there who we don't know yet.
That's exactly what I was talking about. You've got to get it out there. And if you're coming back in April, you better have a game plan ready to go and start hyping by the end of February. And you've got to have a name that people know, more than one. You've got to have a few names that people have heard of and like, okay, well, let's see what's going on here, because it'll just, you know, there're going to be a couple of people interested just out of morbid curiosity. So you've got them, and you can't really count on them as fans, but they will buy a ticket just to see if it's a train wreck. Casey, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. They're going to have to do something. And I mean, I'm sure when PWG started, they weren't doing, you know, Vortex cards. I'm sure they had to kind of develop to that point and get the reputation of, oh, this is the company that like has this many people, but every once in a while they bring in a surprise. And then you can slowly work your way to the point of being all like, we're not going to tell you exactly who's going to be on this card, but based on who's been here before, you have a general idea that it's probably going to be good.
Like, how many names released from NXT and WWE might still be available by then?
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to start hyping by February, there are going to be quite a few whose 90-day clauses just kind of expire right around that time. That
just in time,
ROH needs to start, you know, getting the ball rolling on hyping it up if they were going to do it, so to speak.
Now, the problem I will present with that is, how much are those names going to cost, and how much is Ring of Honor willing to pay?
Well, this is because, where you sit down with the guys and you work out a deal with them.
I understand the deal, but we don't know what Ring of Honor's operating budget is going to be.
Well, I guess we'll find out when we see, based on how many former WWE wrestlers end up on the show, I guess.
Now, they're not going to be able to pick the top names that have been released.
Well, no, because they're probably already getting their deals squared all right.
Yeah, exactly. But there are a lot of mid-level releases that they're going to want to work. And Geishi is here to either back me up or tell me I'm full of shit. But yeah, you've got guys that are, you know, guys and gals that go out there just for the paycheck. But you got guys and gals that go out there, fuck the paycheck. I just want to beat somebody up in the ring.
Yep, 100%.
I want to go out and play.
Yep, the Buddy Murphys of the world.
I think, Casey, I think the very first time I used you, I was only able to pay you $20 for your match, right?
Yeah, but I don't wrestle for money. I'm not.
Yeah. But
I learned a long time ago that I'm not going to make a ton of money doing this.
Yeah. No, here's my thing. I bumped you up to $50 as soon as we drew that crowd.
Oh, absolutely.
And I kept paying you a steady 50, which is great money on the indie scene.
Yes, especially for the experience that I had at the time.
Yeah, and because of everybody who did wrestle for me, that did take that $20 payday, they got bumped up as soon as the crowds were there and the money was there, everybody got bumped up minimum $50. That was the lowest pay, $50, which is pretty goddamn good on the indie circuit for no more than 25 minutes work.
Yep.
Especially when you consider what's out there nowadays. And of course, we're talking back 2012, 2013. So like that would be like the equivalent of $75, $100 today, Canadian. It's that bad up here. Anyway.
Anyway.
So it's a case of, you do me this favor and I'll treat you. I'll take care of you down the road. You do me this favor and I got your back.
Two names available are Kyle O'Reilly and Johnny Gargano, because, as mentioned, they're free agents. Who's going to have the best post run?
Johnny.
Yeah.
I think Johnny can be more set up to be a fan favorite, to be able to carry himself. Not that I don't think Kyle O'Reilly is capable of being a singles.
Would you not think Johnny Gargano's a bigger name than Kyle O'Reilly?
Well, also, Johnny has already set up his pro wrestling tee shop again. But I think Johnny just naturally has fans gravitate to him just through his personality and through just his style. Kyle, I hate to say this, I see him going to AEW. I see them trying to just, you know, respin the Undisputed Era in a sense. And if that happens, Kyle becomes a background player again.
Yeah, I hope he kind of does his own thing, regardless of whether he ends up. If he ends up in AEW, I hope he does his own thing, or he does his own thing somewhere else.
I could see Kyle going to Japan.
Oh, yeah.
And doing well.
Yes, very much so.
Let him go over there for a year or two, reestablish himself, and then see what the landscape is like. You know, maybe by that point, WWE is like, hey, Kyle, we kind of want to, like, try a run with you now on the main roster. Or he can see if AEW is really where he wants to be. I think him just jumping right now into AEW with Adam and Bobby already there and what they're doing, it would not be good for him, in my opinion.
No, he needs time on his own to get back up to a level of being a singles draw.
Yeah.
That kind of push that he was supposed to get, and then it kind of fell short. He's just got to go do that somewhere else first.
Tim?
Yes?
Who was going to have a better post run, Kyle or Johnny?
Well, I alluded to Johnny. I think Johnny Gargano. He markets himself away from the ring.
He does.
To me, he's a bigger name. He's more out there. He's more well known. He's going to have the better run.
Okay. Brett pitched this topic a week ago to me, and he want to elaborate on this one, Brent?
I said a lot of things, okay? I don't know it's going to end up on the show. It's just something I ask Rock, and all of a sudden I look on the forum, and hey, there it is.
Hey, you said, hey, this is an idea for a week and a half from now.
That's okay, yeah, that's true.
That's how this one started. Go.
So the reason for this is because you see a lot of kind of talk and conversation about the ratings and how people do and how, you know, shows are either up or down. But if you've tracked some of that, you've seen that AEW had a spike with the debut of, like, CM Punk and Daniel Bryan and Adam Cole. And yet they've slowly tapered off back to kind of where they were before that. So I was just kind of thinking to myself, if you were in, like, one of the head people in AEW, booker, coordinator, whatever, and you had to come up with ways to improve AEW from either a rating or content perspective, what are three things you would do to kind of help improve the company?
Oh boy.
I'm a wrestler, not a booker.
But you're also a fan.
Yeah, but I'm not that kind of fan. I'm not critical. I watch because I like wrestling, not because I want to go on Twitter and tell everybody what was wrong with things. I go and I watch something and I go, oh, that was awesome. And I forget about all the bad stuff.
Well, I'm not necessarily saying bad stuff, but what would you do to improve? Like, if you could...
How would you, all right, here's a better way to put it. How would you hook the audience to continually come back and grow and tell the casual audience fan, hey, they're doing this great story?
They gotta fix Cody.
Okay.
I don't know how to fix it, but what Turn he's him. Doing just doesn't seem to be, it doesn't seem to be reaching people the way that he wants it to.
Just turn him. Just turn him already.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to. So,
but he,
I mean, he and here's the thing. He doesn't want to. But it's one of those things where if I were in the position of Tony Khan and he's saying, I don't want to be heel, then I would be like, well, then you're going to have to come up with something really, really good to make me keep you face. Thus far, I haven't seen anything.
According to Tony, they're getting the perfect reactions for Khan.
Okay, well, then he's on board with it. That's fine. But
it as a fan, it's like, you need to do something.
But, I mean, here's the thing. I know that what Cody's doing does appeal to people. So, at the same time, where, like, obviously the demographic that apparently is the bee's knees
It is.
To all the people who, I don't know, carry around, who roll around in bags of money and shit. The, what, 18 to 34 demographic? Is that the one?
18 to 49.
Oh, okay. Yeah, cool. So I'm still part of it. Yeah, I guess those are the people that matter. So, I mean, it. I guess it doesn't matter that different audiences are responding favorably to some of the things that Cody's doing, but the vocal, the people who are the most vocal slash the demographic that they apparently want to appeal to don't seem to like it. So I don't know. I guess you have to either appeal to, it's like making a blockbuster movie out of some sort of niche thing, aka like the Marvel Universe. When they make a movie that is in the Marvel Universe, they are going out to try and get as many different demographics as possible, not just the comic book nerds that will watch that movie and be like, well, this is wrong because in the comic book that came out 20 years ago, it was this, 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 and this.
And that is why comic book nerds piss me off when talking about a movie.
Yes, I have the same problem, especially as someone who used to work in a comic book store and likes comics. I understand that they are not making the movie for comic book nerds. They're making the movie for everybody to give them money.
And isn't that the biggest difference between WWE and AEW?
I guess so, yes.
Because WWE is out here trying to appease every demo instead of just one.
Yeah, but I mean, there are parts of AEW that they're using to appeal to the younger audiences. Because you have guys like Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, who obviously is going to be over huge with kids.
Orange Cassidy,
who, like, my kid dresses Orange Cassidy for Halloween and he barely watches AEW. So, I mean, obviously they're doing something to appeal to everybody, but yeah, a bulk of their programming is trying to appeal to the 18 to 49 demographic. So
male,
yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And that's the thing. That's another.
Must be super specific.
No, yeah. Because that's where they're lacking.
They got to do a little bit more to kind of not to the extent of WWE, where they're just concerned with making money and, you know, to heck with the people who are there live. We got to work the TV, brother. But yeah, they've got to do just a little bit more to appeal to everybody else. While still making sure that the keyboard Twitter homies don't get all their dirt sheets in a twist.
So would you say, hold on, Tim. Would you say they have to hook in that female demographic?
Oh, they definitely have.
I hate you, Rock. I hate you so much.
They've got that female demographic
hook, line, and sinker.
Don't swallow that.
It's also a wild jungle out there.
Anyway, I do things to piss off Brent. Anyway, Tim.
Yeah, there you go. Why is The New Day so popular with everybody?
Because they're entertaining.
Because they're marketable.
But what do they do?
Oh, they keep their finger on the pulse.
They entertain the little kids, love them because they're funny, and they do all of the Saturday morning cartoon serial stuff. The hipster kids dig them because they're talking hipster language, and they're, you know, all with it and everything. But why are they able to appeal to the little kids, that hipster group, and the young adults, the grown-ups? They also include the double entendres that only the grown-ups get, and the kids will figure out in 20 years.
Yeah, well, and then on top of that, they're three very, very good, talented wrestlers.
Yes.
So that's how they get the adult males, and they get the kids because they wear bright colors and they do goofy shit because they're not afraid to do goofy shit and still understand that we can do goofy shit, but we can still be taken seriously as wrestlers.
And I don't care if you're 18 or if you're 49, you're still going to laugh at a fart joke.
Absolutely.
Once you're 50, you don't laugh at fart jokes anymore.
Well, that's because you, as an over 50-year-old person, know that...
Oh, yeah, drop the bomb. Thanks. I'm still 35, damn it.
Well, that farts aren't jokes. Farts are just like,
ooh,
they could be disasters waiting to happen in your pants.
Yeah. I shouldn't have had them baked beans for dinner. See, once you hit Vicky, fart jokes aren't funny until you're 75. When you're 75, they're funny again because you've got grandkids.
I thought you were going to say because you revert back to being a kid.
No, well, kind of. You slowly revert, but the grandkids help.
I mean, I didn't know that I had to.
And there's nothing better than pissing off grandma with the grandkids than doing the fart jokes.
I didn't realize I had to take 20 years off from acting like a child.
You got no choice. It's 25 years.
We'll see. We'll see.
So anyway, yeah, there's that.
Since you spur the topic, Brent, what are your three things?
Okay, three things. Number one, build storylines for longer than just one show or event, because I understand kind of like having rotating people through getting exposure for, you know, title shots. That's great. But when you do one and done, it just feels like you can go at this for about 3 weeks. They'll have their shot and then they just disappear and you're on to the next guy. So you can't really connect or build with someone or have these long storylines, except in instances like your MJF Jericho run. That was built out longer, and I think that drew some people in. You've got, you know, other, you know, Cody and MJF, again, was this kind of longer built story, this slow burn that eventually built up to their match. But there were still interactions between them throughout. Instead of just like, okay, we're going to have Daniel Bryan face Adam Page. We'll have a little bit of build for this. And then as soon as Winter is coming. As soon as that hits, that's over. And then it's like, okay, we're going to move on to the next thing. And we'll figure out what to do with, you know, whoever lost. So if you want to build things, if you want to, you know, have it for rating or content or just sustainability, you have to have some feuds continue on for a bit to build the story. Now, do I want it to be like WWE where it's the same feud for 4 months? Not necessarily. But somewhere within that happy medium, I think, can help build.
Like Brian versus Hangman?
A little bit, but if it extended past Winter is coming, then yes, that's what it needs to be.
You could have a year-long feud. A feud that lasts a year before you get the payoff. However, you've got to have subplots. You've got to have shit that happens in between, because having two people jaw-jacking each other for 12 months does get stale really quick.
But I would say, like, the perfect example is what they're doing with CM Punk, of, like, what AEW is. It's like, okay, for 2 or 3 weeks, they build up him versus Darby Allin. They have the pay-per-view match. Great. Okay, now Darby's out of it. Fuck off. We don't care about you. Now we're going to have Punk face the next big one, Eddie Kingston. Awesome. So they're going to, you know, have this kind of 2 or 3 week build. It's going to have heat to it. Everyone's interested. They have the pay-per-view match. All right, now fuck off, Eddie. And now you're having MJF. And it, again, it just feels like so much of like, okay, we want to have this like dream match. This is what we're working towards. Give us like 2 or 3 weeks, get people excited about it, have the match. All right, it's over. Now what?
Okay.
The same thing happened with Omega and Bryan. People clamored for a second match. They wanted to see it so bad after that time limit draw. But by the time they get around to having it again, okay, it's a rematch. It's cool. There's nothing to it.
All right, what's number two?
Stop bringing in people temporarily for a ratings bump and use the people you have. If you want to bring in a talent like an Adam Cole, a CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, great, but make sure they fit within the roster that you have space for as well, and use the people that you have already tried to build, rather than, like, it seems like they'll bring these people in for these short-term contracts or, you know, to open the forbidden door. And sweet, but you're doing that at the expense of people that you told us that we needed to care about and that you have on the roster. And at best, you're going to see them on Dark or Dark Elevation, which you have to be a hardcore fan to want to go watch on YouTube.
Okay.
So it's great seeing Rocky Romero there. I understand that, you know, okay, the best friends have joined Chaos, but are you telling me you couldn't have just had the best friends in the feud? You had to bring in another guy. You had to bring in the New Japan connection for this, which again appeals to their hardcore base because they know who Rocky Romero is. Your casual fan just goes, okay, a guy with an eye patch showed up and apparently the best friends are part of some group. Does that matter? You brought in Minoru Suzuki. No one knows who he is outside of, you know, a hardcore wrestling fan. And then he disappeared just as quick.
And number three?
Develop your women's division. Like, they're starting to do it now with the TBS tournament. They're starting to try and build more than one person. But you've had 4 women's champions, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And again, as soon as those women lose the belt, they fade into oblivion. We just now started to see Riho.
That's one thing that WWE has cold is their women's division. But it took them so long to figure it out. And it took just about that much time for the fans to accept it, too.
But also, I mean, if you look at the WWE, how many different women's storylines do they have running at one time?
Two.
More than that.
Well,
two of shows. Between the both shows, you have more than two.
Yeah, you've got probably about at least five to six, and they're They're featured within the rotation of more than just one women's match. Whereas when you watch Dynamite and Rampage, which are the two big shows, I'm not going to count the, you know, 2 minute matches that are on Dark or Dark Elevation, which apparently other fans don't care about as well. You get one match per week, and I'll give them credit. At least Britt Baker is somewhat involved, whether it's a promo or something, but she's starting to get that MJF feel of, like, when we see her in the ring, it's like a special occasion because it happens once every 3 months.
Yeah.
So when that happens to your women's champion, because that happened to Shida for a while. Shida was champion, but you were sitting there like, when was the last time she defended? And she defended the belt, and then it was like, okay, she'd disappear again. And I understand it was the time of the pandemic, but it still just felt like, when will we see them? And again, like, after Nyla Rose lost the belt to Shida, she was gone, even though she was paired with Vicky Guerrero. That was supposed to be a big thing, and she is just now starting to get rotated in and starting to have somewhat of a storyline or presence. So yeah, those are the three things I would do to just try and build this out, have a roster and use it, and stop doing the one, you know, big appearance to try and pop a rating, because it doesn't sustain. Build long-term storylines and develop your women's division.
All right, good things to consider. So there was one other talent that's now hit the free agent market. His name is Jeff Hardy.
Yikes.
He was released this past week after an incident, I guess, or over the previous weekend, and yeah.
An occurrence.
Something happened. What, we don't actually know, but yeah. Jeff's no longer with the company. The reaction?
Well, a lot of people, because of what happened in that match, are figuring Jeff fell off the wagon that weekend. There are conspiracy theorists out there, however. Have you heard?
On the internet? Jeff,
what's that?
Conspiracy theorists on the internet? What?
Yeah.
No.
Jeff Hardy worked the WWE so he could get released.
I mean, it's not outside of the realm of possibility.
It's not outside the realm of possibility, but based on the comments made by his coworkers, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, no, there's possibility and then there's likelihood. Rock, what were some of the comments by his coworkers?
Very positive and uplifting, and hope he's, you know, doing well.
The type of thing that you say when somebody's had one too many, but you don't want the wife to find out that the hubby had one too many?
Sort of, yeah. But the wife is okay with, is, you know, he's fine, according to her, by the way.
Just to clarify, the wife in this instance is a euphemism?
I know, I'm saying, but no, she, the but, actual
yeah,
wife.
No, I know, you know, I'm just clarifying it for those listening who might not have that figured out.
Yeah, no, but I'm saying the wife in this situation actually wanted to make it clear he's fine.
Yeah.
In terms of conspiracy theory, if that is what he wanted to do to work a way out with his past, it's not a good view.
Not a good look.
No, there's because of, for lack of a better term, the baggage that this man has. It doesn't present a good sign, nor does it allow many avenues moving forward.
No. What's the worst thing you ever saw with concerning Jeff Hardy?
Turning Point.
Mm-hmm. The main event was Sting.
Yeah, Turning Point.
Yep.
Yeah.
Was it Turning Point?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was Turning Point. But Jesus, Eric Bischoff coming out and talking to each wrestler off the mic took longer than that match.
I'm sorry. It was Victory Road 2011.
Okay, Victory Road. I thought it was Turning Point. All right.
But yeah, no. The fact that you caught Sting, who I think a lot of people will say he is, you know, a very professional person on the ramp and the fans chanting like, this is bullshit. And he goes,
I agree.
Goes, yeah, I agree. I agree.
He's looking at, he's staring the fans in the eye when he says this too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we hope he's doing good.
Well, according to his brother and coworkers and all the, you know, all these people out there sticking up for him, he's great. He doesn't need to go back into rehab, even if WWE foots the bill.
And okay, so going on that, he knew he was on his last
run
with him, and the last strike with that. And he wanted it that way. Like, he wanted them to, like, be on him about it, because that's the only way you're going to, you know, be held responsible for your actions, is if they hold you accountable. And yep, they are. So, like, They offered him something, rehab or whatever, to help. He said, no, okay, there's nothing a publicly traded company can do when the optics are this person's having issues. This is not the first time in the last few years that it's happened.
It's not our fault. Look, we offered to help him, and he said, no, you know, it's not our fault.
So it's
that was the optics I picked up.
Yeah. They what are they supposed to do? Because they've stood by him multiple times, but they've also released him multiple times because he's had issues. Yeah.
Events
that have occurred during his time in World Wrestling Entertainment. Does that tarnish his legacy at all?
When you stop and you think about what his legacy is, this is just an addition to it. It doesn't tarnish it any more than it already is.
So what is
it? It's
legacy?
Jeff. I mean, Jeff, you've got, you know, how many times has he been to rehab? How many times has he relapsed? Never mind everything he's accomplished. That's his legacy, relapsing and going to rehab.
See, for me, it's one of those things where I don't want to say disappointment, but when it comes to Jeff Hardy, my first thought is, damn, what kind of career would he have had if he had not had these issues? Like, would he have been a multi-time world, you know, and I know he's held the world title before, but would he have had a much bigger impact on the industry rather than being, and I hate saying it like this, but almost a cautionary tale? It feels almost like he has that same kind of feeling like a Jake Roberts or a Scott Hall.
Well, it's not just wrestlers. I mean, look at Hollywood. You've got all of these actors and actresses that literally have the door to the world open for them, and they shit the bed.
Well, you know what he could have been? If this last run had not ended the way that it did, if he could have kept on the straight and narrow and maybe had one more run, because it looked like they were getting ready to push him. He was being paired with Drew,
yeah,
and he was being featured pretty well on SmackDown. He could have been someone, and I mean, I use Jake and Scott because, you know, they had that serious fall off, and though they've recovered, they've never quite gotten, you know, fully back on their feet again, I'd say.
Yeah, but as far as I'm concerned, WWE Creative is culpable. I mean, it was just a year ago that they were using his real life struggles with addiction as a goddamn storyline with Sheamus.
Right, but what I was going to say is If he had been able to kind of keep it together, he could have been someone else that, you know, using a Hollywood reference, he could have been Robert Downey Jr., someone who had a slip up, someone who did kind of hit bottom for a while. But honest to God, if you look at, you know, when he came back for Iron Man, that was an absolute career renaissance. And now he can do almost anything he wants.
Well, you bring up Iron Man. Did you see the movie Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
Yes.
That is widely considered his reintroduction audition, his audition for Iron Man. After, you know, the thing about Robert Downey Jr., he's lucky. He's got people in his life that kicked his ass when he needed it to get his ass into rehab. And one of them was Robert Downey Sr., his father. I'm not going to let you destroy your life the way you've been destroying your life, you little shit. Get in there, smarten the hell up. Get cleaned up, and no more of this Ally McBeal bullshit.
Well, and I mean, even for Iron Man, they had to take out a huge insurance policy on him.
Oh yeah, well, he had a big insurance policy on him for Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the movie The Good Guys?
The one with
Jake Gyllenhaal and the Australian.
The Australian.
Russell Crowe.
No, it was Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe.
Oh, Ryan Gosling, sorry. I keep getting those two screwed up. But you saw the movie.
Yeah, I know of it.
Okay, the dead body of the porn star mogul, that was actually Robert Downey Jr. doing a cameo. It's your non sequitur movie trivia of the night. I bet you didn't know that was Robert Downey Jr., did you?
No, but there's a ton of, you know, uncredited cameos that happen in movies as well.
Well, this is true.
But yeah, but just... Jeff, like I said, it just feels almost like you wonder what could have happened and how many wasted opportunities there were.
Well, it's almost like he's afraid of that success, though. He's sabotaging every time he gets into a position where he's ready to, you know, go to that next level. He self-sabotages.
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily self-sabotage as much as it's, and Rock and I talked about this earlier in the week. Being on the road for him is the worst thing possible.
Well, having an addictive personality is a very, very difficult thing to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say addictive personality, I'm not talking about, oh, I just can't get enough of this guy because he's my favorite, whatever, blah, blah, blah. That's not what I'm talking about.
Also,
an addictive personality is like you're hooked on something and you can't break away from it. For me, it's Coca-Cola. Also, I'm hooked on Coca-Cola.
Also, timing of certain events also play a factor in relapses.
Mm-hmm.
Such as traumatic events in your life, when including, you know, a parent passing away.
Yes.
Which is his first holidays going without. So I think we can leave it there unless anyone else has anything else to add to that.
Well, just going back real quick to your point, Rock, addictive personalities. And what was I about to say? Self-discipline is the only thing that gets you through, and it's one of the hardest things to pick up. So if he did slip, hopefully he's got enough of a support system around him that aren't a bunch of yes people and enablers and people that aren't afraid to verbally kick his ass when he needs it. Because in a lot of cases, and well, in some cases at least, that's better than rehab.
All right, so we good? Anyone else?
I'm done.
Keishi, you good?
Oh, yeah, I'm good. I don't
know. Keishi, you still awake?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I haven't heard from you for half an hour now.
Well, I mean, y'all covered everything.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all good.
All right.
Less work for me to do. Ha ha. I'm a jobber. Ha ha.
Let's transition into the all-time greatest.
Who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
It's time for another WTR original.
I am the greatest.
All-time greatest.
Well, whoopsie freaking do.
Help us decide what the greatest intro, submission move, or even the greatest title run ever truly is.
I hope I score.
Interact with us in the real-time chat and find out who or what will end up being the all-time greatest.
Stop us now!
We're on the road to determining who is the all-time greatest babyface. So we go with CM Punk against the Hurricane. Keishi.
Hurricane, because he was more of a pure babyface.
Okay.
I mean, CM Punk was good, but he wasn't like a babyface as much as he was...
anti-hero.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Whereas the Hurricane was, I mean, he was legitimately a superhero and an underdog.
What's up with that?
Brian, your pick, you're up.
Oh, I thought you said right. Sorry.
I said Brian.
Okay. My bad. Yeah, piggybacking off of Keishi, I mean, Punk's biggest babyface moment, I mean, excluding that run in ECW, his biggest babyface moment came as a heel when he cut the pipe bomb. And with that, he wasn't trying to be a babyface. It was just the fans decided, you know, okay, sure, we'll go against the establishment, almost in an Austin way, but he was still a heel. And I don't even know, like, if during the run as champion, when he was, quote, a face, if he was really a face. I mean, when he turned around and hit Dwayne, that solidified the fact he was a heel. Whereas with the Hurricane, yeah, no, he had the fans behind him because they wanted to cheer him. And, dear God, it was goofy as hell, but they were behind it. Him and Mighty Molly got over.
Okay.
And I still love the moment in the Royal Rumble where he tries to double choke slam Austin and Triple H, and they just look at him like, what the hell?
So good.
They stop, look at him, they kind of look at each other, just like, let's get them. Just chuck him. So good.
All right, it's two for the Hurricane. Tim, clean sweep?
It's a clean sweep. CM Punk was never a babyface. There's a difference, let's be clear, between a crowd favorite or a fan favorite and a babyface. And CM Punk's pipe bomb was absolute perfection for the Attitude Era. It would have fit in so seamlessly, like in every respect. And it's a case of he brought some realism to it, some reality, mm-hmm, with that pipe bomb. And the fans are like, well, hey, wait a minute. Is he like being serious here, or is this all part of this worked up, you know, scripted promos that they're doing?
Okay.
What? And he was able to muddy that line.
Okay.
And it was what the Attitude Era did, was they took reality and cranked it to 11.
Okay. All right. Next match. Jushin Liger, Johnny B. Badd. Brent.
Jushin Liger. The man was not only a favorite here or in Japan, where he was over as hell. He came to the U.S. and without speaking a word, got the fans absolutely behind him. And he could go into any promotion. WCW, WWE, PWG, and fans would flock to wherever he was, and they would cheer their asses off for him. Johnny B. Bad, again, started as a heel in WCW, got a babyface reaction, but it still always just felt off. And maybe it was just the persona that they were using for him, but it just never felt like he was truly over, like a babyface.
He was over because of his wife. Come on, face it.
Well, no, I was saying in WCW. This is before Sable.
Yep.
Yeah. This is when he was paired with Teddy Long.
All right, one for Jushin Liger. Casey.
Liger. I was never exposed to Johnny B. Bad, so I couldn't tell you whether he was good as a babyface or not. So I'm just going to piggyback off of the intern.
All right, Tim.
Well, for my money, it's Thunder. It's like Brent said. I mean, he could rile up the crowd just by showing up without saying goddamn thing. Johnny B. Bad, Mark Merrill, good in the ring. Average personality, either as Johnny B. Bad or Mark Merrill after his injury, coming back as the prize fighter type wrestler. You got a bit of a kick out of the fact that he was channeling Little Richard a little bit.
Yeah.
And okay, I could dig it. He's got it down. He's doing good with it. That's awesome. But he's a heel. So okay, fine. Then he gets the face pop. Well, again, it's not that huge. And then he got injured.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't really have much of a run as the good guy, as the baby face.
Okay.
So,
and let's put it this way. Liger was over so much as a baby face. He got over the move of having someone stick their thumb up his ass and fans went apeshit over it.
Mm.
All right.
That,
I've got just one last thing about Johnny B. Bad. After his injury, his severely damaged his knee, comes back, he's got to be more grounded than he was. He was a high flyer, but he all of a sudden had to change everything around and immediately had the crowd turn on him because of Rena Mero, Sable.
Okay.
Because she, you know, he was used as a punching bag to get her over.
Okay. Lex Luger, Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, shit.
Tim.
I got to go with Slaughter, even though he had that monster heel run against Hogan and stuff like that. But like the never mind the Patriot. I mean, Sergeant Slaughter as a good guy was the ultimate Patriot. Maggot.
Okay. Casey.
Yeah, I'm picking Sergeant Slaughter, too. When I as a kid, I very much enjoyed Sergeant Slaughter and I did not really care about Lex Luger. So
drop and give me 20 maggots.
Yeah, I never understood the, like, yeah, his whole, like, Lex Express and all that other stuff was great, but I was never into it near as much as I was Sergeant Slaughter, and I don't know why, but I'm going.
You enjoyed being called a maggot.
Did I?
I don't know. Maybe.
I don't know if I remember a promo from Sergeant Slaughter. I just thought he was cool.
Or maybe so. You misheard the word maggot. I don't know.
Maybe I was too young to know what a maggot was. Either way, Sergeant Slaughter is my pick.
I miss that.
yeah, kind of touching on what they've talked about as well. It's going to be Slaughter for me because when you look at Luger, while he was a face in WCW, he was always kind of Sting's counterpart. He didn't really set himself apart as a face on his own, and even in his run with the Wolfpack was kind of a bit player. You mostly remember him as a heel, and again, no personality in a sense. He was just the muscular body.
And then when he was in WWF, all I can really remember is him being a cheerleader for Brett.
Well, they tried to get him over with the Lex Express.
Didn't work.
Well, when he got his match with Yokozuna, he lost by countout, and they celebrated it like he won the title. They were trying so desperately to get the fans to move for him as a face, but they just didn't care. Whereas Slaughter, you know, Slaughter could come out, and the fans would still cheer him. And he was over so much as a face, they put him in G.I. Joe. He became an action figure and a personality on that show in addition to being a wrestler.
Yep.
Yeah.
And with that, I mean, that just kind of shows how powerful of a face he was in that, yeah, he was able to just transcend beyond wrestling into other pop culture and get over.
And one final one for tonight, Rey Mysterio. Randy Macho Man Savage.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Frank.
Yeah, I know. I figured as soon as I said that.
Dig it!
When Savage was a face, he was over, but I feel like more synonymous with being a heel, being linked with Sherry, being, because even when he was a face with Elizabeth, the whole gimmick was he was being overprotective of her and he was acting heelish in like putting her in front of him, and she was just kind of a prop for him. Elizabeth was the ultimate face of that group, both, you know, beauty wise as well as attitude wise. She was the actual face. Rey Mysterio is the biggest babyface in the pairing of these two. He's the underdog. He's, you know, the small guy. He's the high flyer. As much as, you know, Randy, as much as Randy is like an icon in terms of just baby faces, Rey Mysterio is the bigger one. So I'm going with him.
Casey.
I agree. I love Randy Savage. He is one of the best of all time. But Rey Mysterio is the, to quote one Michael Cole, the ultimate underdog. Even when he was acting like a little shit as part of the Radicals, he was still like more of a babyface than Randy Savage. I think Randy Savage's legacy is way better as a heel. His face stuff was great, but if you ask anybody, I'm sure people would like would say that Randy Savage's heel runs were way better. And so, with that being said, Rey Mysterio and all of his million and one different wonderful masks that appeal to children everywhere,
and his five knee surgeries.
It was only five. I thought it was more than that.
Well, first off, I'd like to launch an official protest against both Brett and Casey for using my words. Ultimate underdog being one of them, because that's exactly what I was going to call Ray. He's the ultimate underdog, the biggest small man in wrestling. Randy Savage, I put in the same category as CM Punk, Steve Austin, Mankind. I'm not going to look at them as baby faces or heels. I'm going to look at them as crowd favorites. They were all more anti-hero in that mold, in that genre. That being said, Randy face heel doesn't matter. He's going to pop that crowd, and you're going to dig him whether he's a good guy or a bad guy. You just dig him because he's Randy Macho Man Savage, and that's all there is to it. In this situation, it's the ultimate underdog who's the bigger baby face.
Also, he literally has a baby face.
Yes, you remember WCW where he lost his mask. And yeah. I'm like, what do they got a 12-year-old wrestling for?
If he took his mask off right now, he would still look 14.
Well, you're right. He grew up a little bit. He now looks 14.
So there you go. That's this week's all-time greatest. We're done, Tim.
That's it. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Closing note, I'd like to say congratulations to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers of the Canadian Football League, taking the football game, the Grey Cup, the 108th Grey Cup, which is the Canadian Super Bowl, for you Americans who don't know, by the way, took it to overtime and wound up beating the Hamilton Tiger Cats in Hamilton. So they beat the host, and that just goes to prove and keeps the streak alive that any CFL team that hosts the Grey Cup never wins it. But congratulations to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, winners of the 108th Grey Cup here in the Canadian Football League, the Canadian Super Bowl. That being said, tomorrow night immediately following Raw, it's the Post Show.
It is indeed the Raw Post Show live, but that's 11 p.m. Eastern.
Why don't you say that like you're excited or something?
What's next, Tim?
Well, you do Fortnite with friends still?
That's Saturdays.
Oh, that's on Saturdays now. You moved it. Well, before then, it's the multi-time, multi-award winning, The Rack with multi-time, multi-award winning Lindsay Ward, Thursday night, 10 o'clock Eastern.
We haven't moved Fortnite with friends. It's always been Saturdays. Anyway, yeah, The Rack is live Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. News notes, NXT and beyond. It's The Rack Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern.
Don't lie. You play Fortnite throughout the week.
Yeah, we just don't stream it.
We just don't stream it all the time. But sometimes
I get calls at 8 o'clock in the morning from people wanting to play Fortnite. So there's that. Keep going, Tim. Or not.
Saturday CB Radio.
There you go. Someone's at least on the ball. Tim decided, hey, I'm not going to talk. Yeah, live Saturday Night Midnight is at CB Radio. Before that, it's 4 Night with Friends. But CB Radio's final show of the year is this Saturday. Midnight-ish Eastern. TuberLive.com, GreaterThanGreatDebate.com. We'll be back next Sunday night for another edition of WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio. 10 p.m. Eastern. What we'll talk about? I don't know. But you can follow us on Twitter at WTR Sunday. And that's also on Facebook. Facebook.com/WildTalkRadioNetwork. Twitter.com/WildTalkRadio. Brent, you're on the socials where you make friends.
Yes, I make friends on the internet because, as Casey said, I'm one of those fans. So you can find me on Twitter at Kane Kittens. And if Tim was around, I would ask, what is the difference between a tiger and a tiger cat? That seems a little bit redundant.
Three letters.
But it's the same thing, right?
A tiger cat? Yeah, it's just...
So just call them
that's
tigers.
That's Ontario. I mean, Ontario is like, why use two words when 10 will do?
But just call them the tigers. We do that here.
Well, there's also a good chance that maybe it was a team that had a slightly different name and it's been changed in a way that the name would be Tiger Cats.
They're just honoring that one time wrestler named Tiger Cat, that's all.
We also had two teams with the exact same name here once, so... Like,
yeah, but they were spelt differently. Rough Riders and the Rough Riders.
Yes.
And how are they spelled differently? One was one word and the other one was two words. And one with two words was located in Ottawa with all the rest of the whores.
Casey,
that was a Canadian joke. Casey, you should appreciate it.
Casey's on the socials. Go ahead.
I'm on social media.
Yeah.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Kyle Driver. You'll find me basically doing nothing but telling you about local wrestling shows that I'm either a part of or wrestle for and may not be on the show, but I want you to go watch anyway. Or possibly now you'll get updates on injuries or pictures of ice packs.
Well, are you going to go to the wrestling shows even if you can't wrestle? Because, you know, you can go there and have a felt marker and offer autographs.
I mean, I did go to this past show on Friday, even though I was hurt. So, yes.
You could be like Ant-Man during Endgame. Asking people if they want your autograph.
Yeah, I mean, I can always go there and
take the goddamn camera.
Hobble in there with my merch and spend the entire night selling my merch.
There you go. See? Yeah.
And where can people who don't go to a wrestling show buy your merch at?
You can find that on Redbubble. The backslash for that is Keishi22. But if you don't remember that, which I know I tend to forget... You can find the link to my descriptions in my Twitter, my Instagram.
And that's what?
Kyle Driver. So it's like the word pile driver, but replace the P with a K because I'm funny like that.
Tim?
I'm on face, Twitter space. Follow me on Twitter, at Flames Forums. Yeah, I talk hockey, I talk football, I talk wrestling, I'll even talk baseball. The perfect cure for insomnia, in my personal opinion. It's a great game to play, not a spectator sport. And by the way, golf is a game, not a sport. You want to fight me? Fight me on Twitter, at Flames Forums. And if you don't want to do any of that, well then just, you know, follow me for the dad jokes. Right?
Wrap it up, Tim.
You don't like that Reface app, do you?
Wrap it up, Tim.
That's him saying, that's right, I don't like it. Anyways, everybody, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. Have yourselves a great week. Catch you next Sunday, 8 o'clock Mountain, 10 o'clock Eastern, another edition, WTR Sunday Night.
WildTalkRadio.com.